This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, a new effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's been a long time since I've been this excited about a new natural medical innovation. Zona Plus is the real deal. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. To find out more, go to tryzona.com or call toll-free 1-888-408-6141. That's 1-888-408-6141 or tryzona.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today we're going to cover a subject I think of a tremendous practical import because it's actually a big part of my practice. It's an important way in which I evaluate patients for cardiovascular risk. We know about cholesterol, we know about HDL, we know about all manner of things that we can measure in the blood. We can also ask about a patient's history. But when it comes down to it, where the rubber meets the road, so to speak, is in your arteries. And sometimes there's actually a disconnect between what appears to be the case and what the end result is. In other words, someone who seems to be at risk may not be, and vice versa. Somebody who seems perfectly healthy, going along breezily, reassured by their doctor that everything's okay, could be at risk for a heart attack or stroke. And so today we're going to talk to Albert Barrett. He's Managing Director of Inner Imaging here in Manhattan. It's one of a few places, I think it's one of the only places here in the region, that does a certain type of testing that we're going to describe that provides an early warning about one's risk for cardiovascular disease. The test is referred to as an EBT scan. It yields a calcium score. And we're going to talk about this test. So it's a pleasure having you on board, Mr. Barrett. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. And so, it's a pleasure, really.
And so your background is in bringing this test to the fore in various hospitals and in radiology practices?
It is. In fact, I've worked in medicine for over 35 years doing various projects for the military and some of the projects that have come out of Harvard University's Medical Science Partners, which were embryonic businesses. And I did bring this science to New York 17 years ago. And we've seen over 50,000 men and women who live in this region. And I would say that 47.8% of them every month, that's our number, have coronary artery disease.
Wow.
And it's just it's a remarkable number, really. And it just never, ever changes month to month.
Mm-hmm. And you know, where I see it, there's a couple of problems because, as I stated before, somebody who's in apparent good health could actually be at risk, and we're going to cite some examples during this broadcast. And conversely, we now have new guidelines for statin prescribing, and I've criticized these guidelines because these guidelines seem to create an ever widening net to put more and more people on statins. Sometimes unnecessarily. And many of my patients come to me and say, hey, I've been told I need to be on a statin. Do I really need to be on a statin? And my answer is, well, let's go see. Let's check it out. Let's find out if indeed you're at high risk. And we send them for your test. Sometimes we have very reassuring news for them. And sometimes we say, well, indeed, you are at risk. So you really need to go full court press, not just with statins, but of course with diet, lifestyle, nutritional supplements, etc. So let's speak to both those issues of, you know, sometimes people who seem okay are at risk, and vice versa, that the risk calculators overestimate risk and sometimes consign people unnecessarily to a lifetime of dependency on drugs with side effects.
That is absolutely true. And by example, then, we do an awful lot with the police department. We've seen over 14,000 New York City police officers. But one in particular who does the training for police officers in the SWAT or emergency service category, and an athlete. And one would never, ever have expected him to have significant coronary artery disease because he looked good, He was in the best possible shape, and yet he had such significant disease that warranted bypass surgery.
Hmm.
How do you figure that? So it answers your question. People can be at risk and not know it, and others can be couch potatoes and have arteries that's, from our point of view, score zero. And our zero in our shop means the probability of dying from natural causes over 10 years is 1%. So some of this is inexplicable. Is it genes? Likely. Is it behavior? Possibly. Is it diet? Usually. So those tend to be the three factors that we look at in our shop when we see people that come in with very high scores, and it's very challenging to make discoveries of significantly diseased patients and then explore their family history and what their diet is and what their behavior has been in their lifetime to try and look for causes for the development of this disease.
And I'll give you some examples from my own practice. Two diametrically opposed examples. You know, one was a man that I saw who was in his early 60s, who was a vegan. He was, not only was he a vegan, he was a raw foods vegan. He was rail thin, and he actually didn't come to me because of concern about atherosclerosis. He came to me because he had osteoporosis, perhaps due to his restrictive diet. I mean, the guy consumed no fat whatsoever, no fat past his lips, no cholesterol, no animal products whatsoever for over 20 years. He just subsisted on sprouts and salads and juices. And perhaps that's the reason that he got osteoporosis, because his nutritional status was a little compromised. But then we decided to go further, and we asked the question, could you be at risk for cardiovascular disease? I said, well, it's very unlikely, and we could easily prove that with an EBT test. And we sent him over to inner imaging. And to our surprise and amazement, we discovered that he had a very high score. I think his score was 1,800. He then went for a stress test, which was abnormal. He went for an angiogram, which revealed blockage. He then received an angioplasty to open up his nearly blocked artery, and that could have been a crucial intervention for him. So on the converse side, I've seen many, especially women, there seems to be a pattern, women with astronomically high cholesterol, sometimes over 300. HDL is pretty high too, so we think maybe that's a mitigating factor. They may even be overweight, which is a risk factor for cardiovascular disease. We test them. Certainly, they've been told that many times they need to be on statin drugs, and we find that they have pristine arteries. They have zero scores, and hence are very poor mm-hmm. candidates for going on a lifetime of statins.
Well, I would say that women present differently. I can recall one incident here where a woman came in and she had chronic back pain, and three physicians insisted that it was an orthopedic issue. And we scanned her, and she had significant disease. After she was stented, all of her pain went away.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so there are just so many variables.
So many of my patients will say to me, you know, but my doctor has never told me about this procedure. You know, I had a stress test. The stress test turned out okay. And my doctor said, okay, we'll leave that alone. We'll get you a stress test in another couple of years. No big deal. Why is it that there's less in the way of doctor awareness, or at least willingness to refer patients for this procedure?
That is a very challenging question, and let me try and answer that. Many physicians view their practices as a craft or an art form. And what I can do in 40 seconds is a real challenge to many physicians. In 40 seconds, we can determine if you have coronary artery disease with an accuracy of 99%. And if someone has been telling their patients that they're fine for 10 or 15 years, and they come here on their own and discover they have significant disease, that's a challenge for a physician.
Hmm. It's a repudiation in effect. I mean, it's a pushback against a reassurance that's a false reassurance. Or alternatively, it's a pushback against the assertion that someone's at high risk when it turns out they're not.
And the other aspect is this. electron beam tomography, our science, produces 1/10 the radiation of a regular cat. And it's the fastest in the world. So these pieces of equipment were originally sold to children's hospitals to avoid leukemia and cancer in children. So we are, if you're not up on EBT, then you're down on it, because they cast us in the same light as all forms of CAT scan. And we're very different.
Mm-hmm. And what happens sometimes, Mr. Barrett, is that I will ask a patient to get the test, and they'll say, you know, look, I'm from New Jersey, or I'm from way out there on Long Island, and, you know, I just like to go to any radiology place and get it. And then I'll get a call from the radiology place, and they'll say, okay, we got your patient here. We see your prescription, and we have this we can do the test, but you specified an EBT scan. We do the CT scan. That's the same thing. Let's go ahead and do that test. Okay? Not okay?
It's not okay, because the margin of error is 42%. And the margin of error is so high because CAT scan is so slow. We spin at, this is a technical answer, but we spin at 50 milliseconds, and they spin at 350 to 550. The closer you get to zero, the faster you are. So the right coronary produces noise, because they can't see the disease, but they can see noise, and they interpret noise as disease.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the speed of the equipment that gives you such a high margin of error.
Okay.
So it's not the same.
And also there's the issue of radiation exposure, which is many times higher. And, you know, we want to limit the number of times people go for CAT scans. We all get too many radiological tests during our lifetimes, and it's thought that the radiation exposure is cumulative and ultimately could put us at higher risk for cancer.
Well, I would say this is one of the best tests for women, because we don't circumnavigate a woman's body the way a regular cat does. We screen 210 degrees across the back. So the radiation component that reaches a woman's breast is 8% of 50, which is 4 millirems. It's like a dental X-ray.
Right. So, and comparable, I when I looked it up, comparable to an ordinary chest X-ray, but not a CAT scan. I think people don't understand that CAT scans are like multiple X-rays, many, many X-rays that are computer processed to yield a three-dimensional image. And therefore, you get the radiation, in some cases, of many X-rays. Whereas with the EBT scan, it's done real fast, real short exposure, thus minimizing the X-ray potential.
That is true. And it's poorly understood that way. If more physicians understood that we are a tenth of a regular cat, and women more favorable, then we'd see more patients here.
Okay.
But you mentioned something about a stress test there a moment ago. And this is not a well-known statistic, but 56% of the patients who have a normal stress test have significant disease that goes undetected, because the threshold of that stress test is your artery needs to be closed 75% or more, roughly, for you to fail. So what happens if your artery is closed 60% or 50%? You think you've won the lottery because you have a normal test. It's not the case. So you can't fool us here. We can see the disease. And whether you have a little or you have a lot, we can see it.
And there's some concern that a fairly high percentage of people get heart attacks even when they don't have enough blockage to show up on a stress test, that lesser degree of blockage is something that can be spotted easily by the calcium scoring of the EBT scan.
That's true. 68% of cardiac events occur in vessels that are less than 50% blocked and therefore undetectable by any form of stress testing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so how does it work? I mean, physically, do people get an injection, or, you know, does it take hours and hours? Some people are very claustrophobic. They hate MRIs because they have to sit in a very, very confined space, and then there's a horrendous pounding sound. They have to take Xanax or Ativan during the test. And is it, you know, is it an ordeal, or, you know, can it be done quickly?
This is one of the most simple tests there are. It takes 40 seconds. If you can hold your breath for 40 seconds, we're finished. But in terms of the equipment, it stands about 6.5 feet tall. It's 18 inches wide, and it looks like a very large donut. And your head is always facing the ceiling and outside of the machine. So we screen from your collarbone to just below your ribcage. And we can do that in 40 seconds. There's no noise. You don't have to take your clothes off. There are no injections, and it's completely non-invasive. So patients here for 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And the results are available in 15 minutes.
Right, and I'm told by patients that it's a very efficient operation. You get people in and out very quickly, and that's important for busy New Yorkers who want to get back to work. So what is the Agatson score? You know, that name sounds kind of familiar. And
it sure does. He wrote the South Beach Diet.
Right. And so in my world, Arthur Agatson is known for a great diet book. You know, he's kind of like a successor to Dr. Atkins. The South Beach Diet advocates a low-carb diet. And so what's a diet doctor doing inventing this form of coronary artery screening?
Well, it goes back 26 years ago when the first beta was being conducted, and the physicist who created this science, Dr. Boyd, and Agatston worked together in this field. And he developed the coronary calcium score using the Agatston algorithm. So what we've taken is the presence of disease that we can see, and then using a formula, we convert it to a risk number of 0 to roughly 3,000. And we're all on that scale somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
0 is the best, 3,000 is the worst, and then we have gradients in between. So that would be very low risk, intermediate, and high. And this Agatston algorithm is the gold standard for evaluating coronary artery disease.
And so what do the different scores mean? You know, you can go through some of the numbers here. Zero, of course, is the best. You know, it means arteries virtually clear of any visible plaque. Then there's a cutoff point, I believe, is it 200, 400, then there's 400, 800?
Scores of 1 to 10 are known as early-stage coronary artery disease. It's a unique category all by itself. It's the earliest stages of disease, and that's its definition.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have scores of 11 to 100. We define that as mild plaque burden, low-risk category. Scores of 101 to 400, moderate plaque burden, and that's the intermediate-risk category. And scores over 400 are extensive plaque burden, and that patient's in a high-risk category.
Mm-hmm. And does that translate to statistics? Has this been studied as a predictive measure and then correlated to outcomes?
We have 26 years of data, over 8,000 clinical peer-reviewed studies, 17 years of autopsies, and prognostic data. So I would say that the outcomes based on this particular science are rock solid. Now, that's not a clinical term, but we have enormous amounts of outcome data here because we've seen so many patients, and looking at their scores, when we see a high score, 1800, for example, generally that artery requires a bypass. We see much smaller scores in the left anterior descending artery, and that's generally where we see more stents. Some of this is very predictive. Looking at some patients, we can see that they have high blood pressure because there's a disease in the left main and the right coronary. So yes, there's a great deal of predictive value in this test.
Okay, well, great. You've laid the groundwork for a discussion of the EBT scan as part of an early preventive strategy for picking up cardiovascular disease and determining risk. We're talking to Albert Barrett. He's managing director of Inner Imaging, which is a radiology practice here in Manhattan, and they are unique in performing the EBT heart scan, which is a test that I utilize with patients when we have that discussion. Should I be in a statin? Should I be worried about heart disease? That test is, to me, one of the most definitive ways we can predict risks. When we return, we'll talk more about some of the ins and outs of EBT scanning. And please stay with us for part two of today's discussion. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.